Sugatsia for my friends at Casper. Years of research, hundreds of tests, thousands of iterations. The result? The latest and dreamiest in sleep innovation, including the new mattresses from Casper. Casper has done it again with all new mattresses. Waking up with back pain? Introducing Zone Support, Casper's unique ergonomic system designed to keep your spine aligned when you sleep. There's something brand new called Airscape, engineered foam layers with perforations that help regulate your sleep temperature. From bedding, bed frames, and even a dog bed, Casper has everything to build the dream bedroom for every kind of sleeper. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress for years. I swear by it. Most comfortable mattress I've ever slept on. Anytime they have new innovations, I am in on that. And as always, free shipping and free returns. And now Casper is offering free contactless delivery. And as always, free returns. Go to Casper.com. Use code Lebatard for $100 off your mattress order. That's code Lebatard for $100 off your mattress order. Terms and conditions apply. See Casper.com/terms.
I'm really excited, Chris. I think this is, in the history of the Local Hour, I think this may be one of our biggest guests that we've ever had. Mm-hmm. We're joined today by none other than Juan Pierre. Whew. World Series hero, Marlins legend. Would you say you're a Marlins legend, JP?
No chance. No chance. That's like Jeff Conine, Charles Johnson, maybe.
Nah, I think you're ahead of CJ.
Those guys are legends, man. I didn't do that much, but love playing for the Marlins, man. It's always been good to me.
Well, JP is going to be part of a cool thing the Marlins are doing tonight. They're having a virtual chat presented by Budweiser tonight at 7 p.m. on Marlins YouTube page, youtube.com/Marlins and at Marlins on Facebook. It's kind of like a reunion, I think, of the 2003 world champion Marlins. And that's also going on at the same time. Foxport, Florida is re-airing Game 6 of the 2003 World Series, and fans can join the conversation with people like Juan Pierre, Luis Castillo, Jeff Conine, Todd Hollinsworth, Derek Lee, Mike Lowell. A bunch of Marlins are going to be on it, which is a cool thing. So thanks for joining us today, JP.
No, thanks for having me, man. It's awesome. It's always good to talk about the good past.
Do you stay in contact with a lot of your teammates from them or no?
Dontrell, I mean, I talk to him probably 2-3 times a week. But the other ones I run, like Louis, I'll run them, you know, they live down here in Miami. Alex, I'll run into Mikey Lowell sometimes at the field. But, like, Dontrell is probably the most. Derek Lee, I talk to probably once or twice a week. But other than that, you run past them, but nothing like having everybody come together like this. So I think it's going to be pretty cool.
I can't believe, because you don't look like you've aged a day since the 2003 Marlins. Like, you look exactly the same.
I got young kids. I got to stay. Stay right. They can't get me to their like 15, 16, or 17, man. So I run and work out and do all that stuff with them.
It's hard to believe that it's already been 17 years since that happened. Obviously, as a Marlins fan growing up, that's one of the highlights. That and 97 are two of the biggest highlights, you know, mm-hmm. of our lives in terms of fandom. And I remember what a problem you and Luis Castillo were at the top of the order going back and forth.
Yeah.
Where you guys, one of you would get on base and then Pudge would just drive you in. Cause you get on first base and then you steal second and third, or you get on first and then, you know, sacrifice to get you over and then Pudge will get a hit like down the line or even like an infield hit. And I feel like you'd score from first on an infield hit. So how often do you guys, like, is that something that you guys remember fondly? I mean, I'd assume why would you have bad memories of it?
No, yeah. You always, anytime you're around the baseball field, it kind of pops up. And now with the craziness we in, they're showing a lot of the old games. And to me, it's pretty cool because I never watched, like, the game. Like, hear the commentating, see the fans, you know what I mean? I never sat down and watched them. But during this time, I've been made to watch with my kids. My kids weren't even born, you know, at that time and stuff. So it's kind of cool to relive that stuff. And I still get goosebumps, you know, talking about it because where we started the season and to where, you know, ultimately ended winning the World Series in Yankee Stadium, it's like, it's crazy, and I was just telling someone, I think the fans, we brought the fans in because it wasn't like the Marlins and the fans. It was like we all came together, you know what I mean? It was like a family-type deal where, you know, because we were in the community, you know, me and Dontrell, we'll go to Walmart and be hanging out, you know what I mean, buying fruit with some people, you know what I mean, just in the line, and they'd be like, man, you shop at Walmart? I'm like, yeah, of course I shop at Walmart. Walmart is the best, you know what I mean? But that's the type of stuff I think in the community came along with us, and it was just a fun ride.
Now, you are a guy who you were known for your stolen bases, leadoff hitter, get on base. You always had the green light, I assume. I assume there was never a time in your career where you didn't have the green light. Now, what comes with that is, you know, sometimes you're going to be wrong and get caught stealing and get your team out of an inning. Can you tell us a story in your career of the guy who got the most frustrated with you because you happened to get thrown out and got him ran him out of an inning?
Oh, Jack McKeon. Jack McKeon. Well, I think we were in the Wrigley Field one day. I forgot what year it was, and I stole or tried to advance or something. And he said, "What are you doing out there? Jesse Owens couldn't even made it to that base." So, like, come on, Jack. He's like, "What do you think?" I'm like, "Jack, my goal wasn't to get thrown out. You know what I mean? I thought I could make it." But, yeah, Jack used to get not upset because he'd tell me to go, but sometimes he would be like, "Man, what were you doing right there?" So, yeah, of course. I gambled a lot.
You could steal whenever you want, just be safe all the time. That's a tough way to live. Now, the craziest place you've ever seen Jack McKeon light up a stogie?
Well, he was – so we used to go to church on Sundays, you know, during the season and stuff. And he would smoke all the way up until he gets to church, and then he'll put it on the ledge outside of the church. And he, once church is over, he comes and picks it up after church. But I was like, "Jack, man, you'll leave it out there for a good 30, 45 minutes." But, yeah, Jack. And the biggest thing I loved when he used to walk and exercise smoking a cigar. That was the best. That was the best. He would walk around the field, exercise, and smoking a cigar. Man, I'm like, "Jack, you the man for that."
JP, you are probably – we were saying before how you're, you know, one of the greatest Marlins ever, how you're a legend, and you disputed that. Now, I don't think that you can dispute that you're one of the most fun Marlins ever to watch just because of the fact that you always had the green light. And you famously – I know that there was a video of you before the World Series where you'd take the field a couple hours before and you're just rolling the ball down the line to see how it is that the ball would play. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you know this. You and I have something in common. We were both – incredible bunters. I used to go by Billy Bunt. I was on the Seattle Mariners, Coach Lazaro, undefeated. I don't know if you heard of us. But we were both great bunters. We'd kind of set the table, get on base. Now, it was a little bit different then because this is when I was like 9 or 10 years old, so no one knew how to field the bunt, and I was kind of just too small to hit, so they'd have me bunt, and then there'd just be errors. But I feel like you and I were on the same page, and I'm wondering, baseball right now, not a lot of bunting going on, and I'm wondering why that is, in your opinion.
Just the statistics behind the stuff where, you know, everybody's playing for the long ball. And that's what's funny watching the Marlins guy. I think it was game six, I think Derek Lee. He's like a 4-5-0 hitter, hit 31 home runs that year, and he sacked bunted. I'm like, you would never see that right now. You know, I just think the way the game is played, because I think I did one interview, and they said we hit like one home run in the World Series, or maybe two, and like in the playoffs we didn't hit but like maybe two or three home runs as a team, or more than that because of the Cubs. But it was some number where it was like a low home run mark, but we ran the bases, we did all the little stuff, man. And and that was fun because I think in Miami this is the only city with fan wise that really embraced that for me, because nobody even noticed the game I played, stealing base run, wherever team I played on, they're like, the guy that hit the home run got all the pub, whatever, which I didn't get much pub here, but the fans really enjoyed the base run and the bun and stuff like that, and that blew my mind. So, but yeah, I don't know why, you know, I used to do the bun station at spring training with the Marlins now, with the pitchers, mostly the pitchers, and I tell them, I'm like, "Bro, this station won't be here another year or so, because if you get ready for the DH, boy, get ready for the DH," and sure enough, I think this year if they play, everybody's going to have a DH.
Now, JP, 2003, that's just like my heyday. I'm 33 right now, so this is like, I was in high school. It's just my heyday. And if I text my Marlins group chat right now and I say Marlins walk-up songs, the first one they're coming back to me with is "We Ready, Juan Pierre." That, I'm telling you, man, I loved that walk-up song. I don't even know if you realized how popular it was with fans. Just take me back to that. Like, what made you choose that song? Did you realize that the fans loved that song as much as they did?
The walk-up song was especially big. Now, I think guys change it every other at-bat now. But back then, like, whatever you got, like, you had to stick with it. You know what I mean? So it's a big process. In all season, you're listening, you're working out, man. You're doing all this stuff. So it's not – the walk-up song is really big. And we played in the football stadium. The Dolphins still blasted. I'm like, wow. And of course, I mean, unfortunately, we didn't have that many fans. So you were really here. You were really here loud. And, oh, yeah, today, to this day, I could be at a Heat game or something. They'd be like, JP, we ready? I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? So I didn't know what effect it was going to have on the fans. It obviously did.
And you, like, kind of what Billy spoke to before about going out, rolling the ball, you were very, you kept your same routine. And I remember seeing you. You would stand in the same spot, like when the pitcher was warming up, and you'd have your routine with the swing. It was the same exact spot, the same exact every time. If I say to you the strangest daily routine, like the something that you did every day that made you, you know, the player that you were.
Oh, man, I mean, just the work. I mean, I was really meticulous with it. Like, I had to be in the cage from, like, 2 to 2:30. You know what I mean? Everything was, like, broken down, like, to the minute for me. Even, like, going out on the field, I would always go out on the field, like, at 6:30, like, to warm up and stuff and give me 10 minutes. Like, I was just – it came second nature, you know what I mean? But, like, even coming up to the plate, like, I knew I had to do the two steps before I went in. You know what I mean? So, it was, and some people notice that stuff because
I noticed it, man. The two steps, I'm telling you, every bat. Yeah. I think I copied because I played high school baseball. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure I emulated that. I was like, I got to have the routine, man. You got to do the same thing every time you step into the box.
Every time, man. And the reason I did it because it was to get my hands moving. Because sometimes I would skip sets, so I would do the thing just to get my hands moving, the two steps. So it did have some meaning behind it. But yeah, and the we ready kind of, I think, set the tone for the teams that we were playing. Like, when I was leading off the game, it's like, all right, guys, you in South Florida, you in the hot foot, Joe Robbie, pro player, whatever it was called back then, it's hot, it's 100 degrees, about to rain here, and you're in, we call it the fishbowl back then, and we got probably 5,000 fans, and we're going to bring it to you guys.
What was it like in the World Series and the playoffs? Because I obviously, like, as Marlins fans, we were there in the 5,000 fan games, and 5,000 sometimes was, like, generous. But when you get to the World Series in the playoffs, you have 65,000 people there, and you're playing against Roger Clemens, and every pitch is like everybody's taking pictures because you think it's going to be his last start. How do you even see to hit that?
I was watching the game the other day with it, and I'm like watching it as a fan, and I'm like, I was thinking, like, how did we do that? Like, how did you play like that? Like, the people, the thing, and because all season long, like, Codona being left or Encarnacion, we'll have like whole conversations out there. Now ball go up, you can't hear Dak. You know what I mean? I'm like, I got it. He can't hear me. I can't. I'm like, this is not normal right here. So it was a good feeling. I mean, we're just excited for the fans. It gives the fans something to cheer about, something to latch on to. And I think our team was special like that because how we came from the first part to ultimately winning the World Series is kind of like how Miami's built. Miami's built with a lot of people that have to get it how they live, you know, people that come from Cuba, you know what I mean, and stuff like that where stuff is not handed to them. So they got to make a way for themselves, and that's kind of how the Marlins team was kind of – outside of Pudge, I don't think nobody even knew half the players on the team.
So one thing that I remember fondly from that run also was when you guys clinched the wild card, you clinched the wild card at home, and they had kind of a cool thing that day. When you guys did it, there was like a celebration in a tent, like almost in the parking lot with the fans, and you guys were like running out, and you're all hyped. You had like the champagne. Everybody was going crazy, right? One of the things that I remember the most from that whole experience was AJ Burnett was out that season. I think he had like Tommy John surgery or something. Mm-hmm. He was having a lot of fun that day. And at one point he took off his shirt. He had two pierced nipples. He was like waving around his shirt and the champagne and was going crazy. What's a story like that like the fans wouldn't see that it's like, yeah, this person was kind of crazy in our clubhouse?
Yeah. AJ was, he was like my locker mate. So he was actually the prankster on the team. Every day I had to check my shoes, make sure he didn't put like a spider or something in there. Brad Penny, Josh Beckett, AJ, it was like all the rednecks on the team. So they used to hunt, fish all the time. So they'd go fishing after the games. And one day Penny caught like a baby alligator, you know. So guys in their shower, he puts the baby alligator in the shower. You didn't see so many guys run out of that thing so fast.
Wait, what?
Yeah, like little baby alligator, you know, guys shower, you might be shampooing, you might be eyes closed, you know, and you go in there and the baby alligator's in the showers. You know, old school shower stalls, you know what I mean? Guys showered up and I'm like, what are you doing, man? So I remember that vividly. Josh Beckett always swung a golf club in the clubhouse. And after repeatedly telling him not to do it, he always had to swing the golf club in the clubhouse, tearing up stuff. He would hit all kind of stuff. You know,
oh, wait, hold on. He was swinging a golf club and hitting a ball?
No, he wasn't hitting the ball. He was just not measuring out the golf club swing. He was and all that stuff. But we had a collection of guys, man. You had Dontrell and Miggy, the Young Bucks that came on, and it really energized our team, you know what I mean, because we were dead out of it by the time they got there. And, you know, Jack came in and did his thing. So, but AJ was one of the definitely on the team amongst many.
All right, JP is going to be part, and you mentioned Brad Penny. They're both going to be part of the virtual chat presented by Budweiser beginning 7 p.m. tonight, Monday night, on the Marlins YouTube page, youtube.com/Marlins and @Marlins on Facebook. You can also watch the clinching Game 6 of the 2003 World Series of Fox Sports Florida. You mentioned Dontrell. So you and Dontrell became tight throughout the year. He was brought up in the middle of the season. He was a rookie, and it was a phenomenon. It was Dontrell mania. He went, you know, in a couple starts from unknown, selling out like – not selling out, but like 40-plus thousand when he's pitching against Randy Johnson.
Yeah.
Is he really the catalyst, him and Cabrera, what got things going for you guys as a team? Because not that you weren't together, but it was – you got rid of Torborg, you brought in Jack. Everything just seemed to click right around the same time.
Yeah, I think that was – that boost we needed, you know what I mean? Those guys are energetic and dumb, like you said, Dontrell, man. I was like, I always tell them, I said, man, if you would have grew up, came up with social media days, you would have been like the man. You would have had like millions of followers and stuff like that. But, you know, he brought attention to Marlins baseball. Like, we didn't even get on sports at our own thing until the night he pitched. You know what I mean? They just showed out school usually. And Miguel, he was just a phenom. I think his first game, he hit the walk-off home run against Tampa Bay, dead center. And I remember one story with Miguel, because he's up like a couple weeks. So he strikes out on a breaking ball. You know what I mean? He's young. So I'm like, oh, don't worry about it. Kind of like young buck. You'll get him, man. He's like, no, Poppy. He threw me that pitch again. I hit a home run. Easy, bro. It's not up here. Sure enough, next at bat, breaking ball, home run. I'm like, all right, the truth. I tell everybody, like, he's going to be Hall of Famer, boys. Like, you know what I mean? And for him, back in the World Series, taking Roger Clemens out, like, he's had it. He's one of the few. He's like a Pujols where these guys just hit the ground running and they never stop hitting and never been just been dominant their whole career.
Now, as a baseball player, I assume you're extremely superstitious. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I've said many times to Billy and other people on our show that I am a big part of the Game 4 game-winning home run by Alex Gonzalez in that World Series. Now, I was sitting in my seats for like the whole game and we were struggling. The Marlins were in a rut late in that game. We didn't have a bunch of runs. So what I did was I was like, you know what? I'm going to go up to the concourse and watch this half an inning from there. And I did that, and Alex Gonzalez hit that home run. Can you please tell Billy that I was a vital part of that?
Vital? That's vital, man. That's being a team player. That's leaving your seat for the good of the team.
Exactly.
To go out there and do it. You got to switch it up. You have to switch it up, man. He had a big part in.
No.
They claim to that. I'm gonna tell Alex. Monday, I'm gonna tell Alex Gonzalez. Part of the reason why he hit the home run, my man took one from the team, left his seat. I know it was hard, right?
It's hard. No, he was getting food or going to the bathroom or something, JP. He was not getting up for that.
I was not. I told my mom. I was a little kid at the time. I was like, Mom, I'm going up there. I'm just watching it from there. I need to change this up. Enough of this. Yeah.
But what kind of parents do you have that let you wander around the concourse by yourself?
He was in high school.
Yeah.
Well, I also, JP, I don't believe that you're going to tell Alex Gonzalez that on Monday. All right, well, we're gonna tune in Monday, 7 o'clock, Marlins YouTube page.
I know it's like 8 people there. If I get a chance, I'm a Bogart, and I'm gonna tell. I know that situation's gonna come up. They're gonna ask Alex about the home run. I'm gonna tell.
Well, when they ask Alex about the home run on the YouTube page, Marlins YouTube.com/Marlins, 7 o'clock on Monday. Check it out and see if JP does it, because I really don't believe that you're gonna look. When you guys are there and you haven't seen them in a while and you're going to be talking about different things, you're not going to be thinking about Chris. You're not going to be thinking about this home run. You're not going to be thinking about that.
Yeah, he is. I see it on his face, Billy. You're wrong. He is.
Either he froze or he has a really poker face.
That would be fun. Well, I think we might have lost connection with you, JP, for a second.
Yeah, you cut it off on him.
Dude, it was so funny. Like, it looked like you were just blank staring at Billy. Like, I'm going to tell him, Billy. Like, you just froze, like, right in, like, a blank stare, like.
Yeah, and y'all was staring at me too, so I'm like, cut it off on him, man. I was like, they gonna cut the interview out like that.
So, JP, I feel like you have one of the more interesting careers in the aspect of you're a guy that you received MVP votes at points in your career. And then you also had stat heads saying that this is a leadoff hitter. He doesn't walk enough. I heard Tim Kirkchin say, you have the most hits of any player of all time that never made an all-star game. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, when you hear all those things, how do you evaluate your career? And are you upset that you never made an all-star game?
I mean, I'm like a country boy from Louisiana, man. Like, for me to get one day in the big leagues was like, I never would have dreamed of it. You know what I mean? So anything on top of that, World Series, hit, all that is bonus. You know what I mean? I take pride in my game, no doubt. But when people say that stuff, I heard it my whole career, like, because I tried to walk more and do all that stuff. But, like, the pitch coach tell me, like, do not walk this guy. He's going to steal the base. So that's one thing I wish I could have done, like, was make the all-star team, because I had – but when I was – you know, yeah, Barry Bonds, Larry Walker, Andrew Jones, Jim – you know what I mean? He was like some studs, man. So when you look at it that way, I wasn't, like, disappointed. And I definitely take the World Series ring over All-Star.
What's the year, though? I know there's got to be one year that you're like, I should have been an All-Star that year.
04? 04, that's coming off the World Series. I'm like, man, that was, like, batting, like, three, whatever, 20 at the break with, like, 40 bats.
Yeah.
I had one in Colorado. It was like 0-2, but I knew I wasn't going to get it because nobody watched the Rockies. But I was batting like 330 at the break with, like, you know what I mean? But that was the time where you just had studs out there. But those two, that I think 0-1, 0-3, and 0-4, I'm like, man, I thought I could have snuck in there somehow, some way.
Now, I don't have statistical data to back this up, but there was nobody better in Major League history at having the at-bat sequence of foul ball, strike two, foul ball, foul ball, foul ball, foul ball, ball two, foul, single. Like, you were the king at just having long at-bats where you never got to, like, a two-ball count. It was insane.
Yeah, and I contributed a lot to that. Me and my brother playing wiffle ball in the backyard, you know, playing strikeout. It's like, you gotta make contact. That's why I kind of grins when guys strike out 150, 200 times. I'm like, bro, how do you strike out that much and not be ashamed? Like, we can embarrass you struck out that much, you know, back in the day. But I was watching the Cubs game, the Bartman ball game and stuff, like, leading off that with Mark Pryor. Like, when I got the hit down the line, it's like, foul ball, foul ball. Because I forget how many foul ball. I'm like, all right, this is the hit. I'm like, foul ball. I'm like, oh, no, this one I hit. I'm like, foul ball. So, and then that me and Louis at the top. Louis was the same way. Louis probably was even better at it than me. Because Louis used to draw more walks than I did. So to have us both at the top where, like, you really couldn't strike us out. Like, we're going to battle you. And then by the time you got the Pudge and Miggy, hopefully we wore you down. And then that was our game plan. But, yeah, I do remember that. I'm like, man, I'm not striking out. I'm just fouling off, trying to get a good pitch to hit.
What was that Bartman-like game for you guys since you brought it up? Because obviously as a fan, you seem like, great, the Marlins won. But that guy's life, like, fell apart. But you guys made it to the World Series because he kind of, maybe reached over. Yeah. Maybe reached and interfered.
Right. It's kind of funny because, like, hearing all the replays and the guys talking, like, I was on second base. So I don't know what was going on in the dugout. You know what I mean? So when I hear the interviews, like Mikey lost, I think one of them, Conan, said, hey, let's make this guy famous. So I'm like, I had no clue they were saying that stuff. You know what I mean? I'm at second base. He's trying to score and stuff. So, and at the time we thought, you know, for my hand, I'm like, I don't know if could have caught it or not. And, you know, we just was playing the game. And then after just started snowballing on the guy. And then as the innings was going on, I think they had to escort him out and just stuff got really nasty. And, you know, when you're in the thick of things, you're not thinking about it. But as you look back on it, you're like, that's messed up.
Yeah.
You know, the guy had to move.
I'm wondering if you thought about this, JP, because it's something that I think about all the time, which is weird because why would I think about this? But Luis Castillo, left-handed, great hitter, contact guy, get on base, right-handed. The guy was like Barry Bonds. He was like a right-handed Barry Bonds. And every time he's hitting right-handed, he's hitting home runs. Why is he not hitting right-handed more often?
I don't know. Trust me, he probably won it the way he'll be. Yeah, he turned into Barry Bonds, had a leg kick and everything. That's why when I got on first base on the lefty and he was up, I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. He's gonna hit one out. Or he's gonna have a good at bat. But yeah, he was so much fun, but his mind frame was that. Like, left handed, get on base, do what I gotta do. But right handed, he's like, Bobby, I take this guy deep. Yeah, so he was good like that, man. He was awesome because his brain switched. As soon as he went left, man, he knew what he had to do. It never, like, carried over, switched over. Like, he knew right-handed what to do and left-handed what to do.
Lefty was just contact, get on base, hit whatever, just get on, steal some base. Right-handed, I mean, it was, like, super aggressive, like, just going into power hitting.
But it was his natural side, and he felt like it was like a, what is it, like a holiday. Like he gave a treat back, right hand. So he's like, I'm not messing this up.
I mean, I feel like we're being, Billy, you specifically, I feel like we're being a little cavalier. I mean, Luis Castillo from the left side was like a 320 career hitter or something, and he batted a lot lower average from the right side with more pop.
No, right-handed, he would have hit 400 home runs at least in his career, at least.
Even a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any good, because Dontrell Willis comes up that year, you and him are good friends, you kind of take him under your wing. Does he ever get big-headed? Because he's the guy that, like, the crowd is empty for Brad Penny's start, and then the next game there's 50,000 fans there. Do you have a story of, like, him, his head getting a little big where you got to, you know, had to cut his legs a little bit?
No, he kind of just rolled the wave. You know, he's from Oakland. He let everybody know he's from Oakland, Alameda. But he kind of rolled the wave. He didn't really get the big head too much because we had so much going on. Like, the whole team were winning. We had a lot of veteran guys on the team. So if he did, he kept it on the wrap. But definitely, you know, he never aired out. Maybe in his mind, he probably thought, especially when I remember the game, they had the Sports Illustrated covers, man. Everybody had the Sports Illustrated covers in the stands and stuff. Of the Sports Center, he made the cover of it. I'm like, wow, bro, you have.
They gave out the train hats and the whistles. Yeah, you had the people in the outfield.
Yeah, it was awesome. I think even the Mermaids wore their socks up high when he catch you. I said, you arrive when the Mermaids dressed like this.
Now, did any part of you ever get a little bit jealous of Juan Encarnacion having the chant 4, 3, 2? Juan from the crowd. No. That was like a thing for Juan Encarnacion for some reason. Did you ever say, why don't I get that?
No, because because Inky, man, Inky, you know Encarnacion, man, he probably didn't even hear him say it. Like, he was just stone-faced. Like, he showed no emotion. And he was, I think he was 20-20 that year. Close to it, 20 stolen bases, 20 home runs.
That guy was underrated. That's one of the more underrated Marlins players.
100%. I agree, especially during that season. Like, he had an unbelievable season.
Not to turn this in a sad direction, but has anybody heard from him? Didn't he have, like, some horrific injury?
Yeah, he had a foul ball. Yeah, foul ball. I think he's in the Dominican. I haven't talked to him. Like, I would love to see him. Yeah, I was one that I wish would be on call. But, yeah, I think he was standing on deck in St. Louis. I think he was in St. Louis, and the foul ball got him in his eye, and he couldn't play again.
Yeah.
But I feel like definitely most underrated on the team.
I feel like we shouldn't go out on a bummer because it's kind of like a low note to go
I'm
out
sorry.
On.
It's just, so when you say Juan Encarnacion, that's where my mind goes. I'm sorry. That was bad by me.
No, let's go back now because you say that you're not a Marlins Hall of Famer. I say that you are. And I would say first ballot, probably Marlins Hall of Famer. So let's say that we have a Marlins Hall of Fame that we're constructing, right? And only five people can get in. One manager obviously can be Jack McKeon because we're going to put in Freddie Gonzalez. No. So it's going to be Jack McKeon for the manager. So who would you put in your Marlins Hall of Fame, the first class?
You throwing, Mikey Lowell. Jeff Conine. He's Mr. Miami. Jeff Conine is Mr. Miami. And this is, I'm biased because this is like the best first baseman I ever seen in my life, Derek Lee.
Oh, so good.
Like, he was so good. Like, he's another underrated guy. Like, he's up there with, he's really, like, I know he blocked the Cubs, like, offensively, but man, this guy, we won probably about 10 games just on his defense alone. Like, he's the man.
JP, it was a crime that Alex Gonzalez never won a gold glove. Like, him and Luis Castillo were one of the best double play combinations that I've ever seen. And he never got the credit that he deserved defensively.
Got the credit because, you know, like, we got no fan support down here, so nobody knew how good he was. But I was so glad for him in the World Series that him and Louis finally got their just due because people saw how good they really were. And they were like, man, these guys are – I'm like, bro, they make these plays, like, every day. Like, you should see what they do in batting practice. That was the real treat. They were third double plays without, like, catching the ball. They were, like, kicking to each other, man. They were unbelievable.
What were your thoughts on how ridiculously that Marlins outfield was designed?
The football field, man. The lights were like football, like lights. Now, I don't know if y'all have been to the Hard Rock now, but it didn't even look like a baseball.
No.
They did a great job of making a football. I know this is probably not need to be recorded, but like I'm going off. But I'm like, when I went in there, I'm like, man, because you just see what a dugout was. Because even when they played in it back in the day, you could still kind of see the baseball field in the field, and now it's like gone, you know.
I mean, I just feel like even at a football stadium, that little triangle
The Bermuda Triangle.
What was the point of that triangle? I feel like it could have just been a straight wall there.
just to mess with you. I've hit that wall a couple times out there thinking about that. But, it was a weird constructed thing. But we loved it. I loved everything about Pro Player, Hard Rock, Joe Robbie, whatever it's called. We really embraced playing there as a team.
Well, we thank Juan Pierre for joining us today. JP, as we call him, as his friends call him. Check out the virtual chat presented by Budweiser. It'll begin 7 p.m. tonight on the Marlins YouTube page, youtube.com/Marlins, and at Marlins on Facebook. JP, thank you so much for joining us today. It was so much fun talking to you, man.
Thank you, guys, man. Anytime you want me on, man, I'm here for you.
Awesome. Thank you, JP.
Thank you, guys.
All right, stay safe.